Tony.
Hello, Canada. Today's date is March 17th, 2024. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to a full edition of Canadian Common Sense, Canada's Issues, in about an hour. It is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC.
How are you, my friend?
Well, I'd be better if any of the Canadian teams could win.
Well, there was one, and that's actually why our show was a little later today. I try at least once a year, if I can, to get out to a Calgary Flames game. And last night was the perfect occasion because a friend of mine who is a Montreal Canadiens fan and I decided pretty much last minute, hey, let's go to Calgary and watch a game. And well, listener, Ashley, I know you know this already, and sorry, not sorry, but the Flames actually were the one Canadian team victorious last night. Calgary 5, Montreal 2, and unbeknownst to us when we got there, they were actually celebrating the Flames' 1989 Stanley Cup victory, and a bunch of the players from that team were actually in attendance. Not there, but they were up in a press box, and so nobody got actually to interact with them, but they had some of the greats like Lanny McDonald and Mike Vernon, Jamie McCowan, and a few others from the team were all in attendance. So it was,
didn't even know that there were any surviving members of that team. It was so long ago.
Well, funny you'd say that, because there was some of the folks who were working in the Flames office at that time also in attendance. And one guy who was the voice of the Flames on the radio and for 30 plus years, and he's probably been retired for 20 odd years. And those gents, boy, those guys looked really, really old. So.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, 35 years ago.
Yep.
I mean, that's, geez, man. Like, I mean, you talk like, let's be real. I mean, the last Canadian team to win the cup was 93, and that was Montreal. And I mean, we're talking 31 years ago now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. But it was a good game. Like any time that the Maple Leafs or the Habs do a sweep through Western Canada, almost half the crowd was wearing Habs jerseys in Calgary. And like I say, and if that was the Leafs, it would have been the same way. So it was, but it was good. I mean, I was surrounded equally by Habs and Flames fans. So that was great. And so, yeah, I'm actually just getting home Sunday afternoon. So we're doing the show a little bit late. But it was hockey night in Alberta because we got to watch the Flames game and then get back to our hotel and manage to catch most of the Oilers game, which did not end well, but boy, that, I gotta say, the Oilers are still a very, very exciting team to watch.
Yeah, and it didn't end well. I mean, the winning goal for Colorado was half a second left in overtime, so yeah. that was heartbreaking.
Definitely was, yeah. But yeah, it was certainly good to get out and see some live NHL action. Don't get nearly enough of that.
And the Leafs lost, so nobody cares. And the Canucks lost as well. So congratulations to all the Canadian teams. We're going to make sure that no one wins the cup again this year.
Well, before we went, I was telling some coworkers, I said, yeah, we're going to go watch Calgary Montreal and see what it looks like when two teams that have no chance of making the playoffs get together.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got one housekeeping note for you today. The recall campaign to recall Mayor Jody Gondek in Calgary takes another twist. And she didn't step down. And no, there is nowhere close to the requisite amount of signatures to recall her. But she has agreed to a meeting with Landon Johnston, who is the local HVAC company owner that started the petition, claims to have over 100,000 signatures to date, and asked Jody Gondek herself to sign the petition, which sparked her to meet with him. I love this reporter that she said to him, well, I wish you would have talked to me before you started this process. And he said, well, I tried to, and you wouldn't meet with me. And then I asked my city councilor if I could address council, and they wouldn't approve me to speak to council. So, well, I didn't have much else for recourse. And so, well, you could have headed this one off, Miss Gondek, but you chose to ignore the peasants, and well, now the peasants revolt.
Yeah, this is the way politics have gone now. Politicians feel like they are in charge rather than they work for the voter, for the taxpayer. And that, it's kind of like the carbon tax federally, where the government is saying, nope, you're going to pay it. It's going to be increased, all of this. Everybody's screaming, I don't want it because we can barely afford groceries as it is. And they said, nope, this is for your own good. Right. And it's just they're just forcing it down on you. And that's the way politics have gone recently. And it's unfortunate, but I gotta give the mayor some credit. She has decided to meet with him or did meet with him. So that's good. I mean, not many mayors would actually do that.
Yeah, so the meeting, yeah, she hasn't met yet. So I guess they're meeting on the 22nd, which would be later this week, I'm guessing. Or so I guess it would be Thursday, would be the 22nd. So yeah, she will meet with him for 15 minutes to discuss this petition. And I am sure that there will absolutely nothing will come out of said meeting, but at the very least, I guess he gets to say his piece to the mayor herself. So there's that.
Yeah, well, and that's an official Canadian common sense prediction. Nothing will come out of this meeting.
Yep. And we'll be right. Just so you know. And you already do know that. So okay, we've got a great show for you today. Unfortunately, only focusing on a couple areas of the country, but on the show today, more madness on the left coast. Liberal Tory, same old story. Carbon tax revolt. Canada takes a number two. Trudeau on trial. And more. Where do you want to start, sir?
Oh, let's start in my backyard. I before we start, I just want to apologize to our listeners because we've been talking about BC a lot. And there's a reason for that. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening in my province, and there's a lot of crazy people out here, and the politicians are even crazier than the people who vote them in. So I apologize, but like California, what starts in BC spreads to the rest of the country. So it's important that you know about what's happening here.
Yeah, so let's start, well, almost the furthest west in BC, at least as far as the mainland is concerned. So there's a little area along the Georgia Strait, northwest of Vancouver, called the Sunshine Coast. I don't know it very well. I do know where it is, roughly. Those of you
One
old enough,
of
go ahead.
the most beautiful places in the world.
Okay. Those of you old enough to remember the show The Beachcombers was actually filmed in, Gibson, I think it was, on the Sunshine
Gibson.
Coast. Yeah. So Sunshine Coast decided that, well, it wasn't good enough for Calgary to declare a climate emergency and them to be left just sitting on their hands. The Sunshine Coast has now declared a climate emergency in the municipality of the Sunshine Coast.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, of course, because BC.
Yeah, that's the only reason because I've yet to see a reason why it would be declared a state of emergency. I'm a little speechless on this one.
Yeah, I mean, apparently they had already, I'm not sure if they had declared a climate crisis or if they had, or if the word climate crisis had ever been officially in any kind of regional documentation, but they decided the climate crisis was not good enough. Sunshine Coast is now in a state of climate emergency. Yeah. And if that wasn't crazy enough for the fine folks in the Sunshine Coast, the city of Powell River, which is also in the Sunshine Coast, is now embarking upon a potential name change because the name Powell River, of course, was named for Israel Powell, who just happened to be a superintendent for the Department of Indian Affairs for BC from 1872 to 1879. And he supported residential schools and assimilating First Nations into the dominant European culture. How dare they keep that name?
Yeah, and this was brought to the council by a local Indian band, I honestly not sure how to pronounce the name, so I'm not going to try. But they brought it to council, asking them to consider a name change for the town. Council has decided to put it on a referendum in the 2026 civic election. They're already talking about possible names. They haven't released them to the public, though. From my understanding, the articles that we read made no mention of any possible names. It's created quite a division in the town itself, understandably. People are either on board or they're not, and it's just I don't understand why this is supposed to be so sorry, I'm just trying to find the words to describe how I feel about this because I am sick and tired of everything having to change their names from streets to towns to civic centers to universities to everything. Everything's got to change their frickin' name. And it's like, you know what? Instead of changing all the names, like, why don't we, learn from history? Go, why is that name on that street or that town or whatever? And talk about it, right? Talk about the good and the bad because not all these, because these people weren't all bad. Like everybody in history and currently have views that could be considered bad by other people. And that does that mean that everything, like, does that mean we shouldn't name anything after anybody anymore? Like, I mean, because that's what's going to happen. Because if you're going to judge history by today's standards, then nobody's going to live up to you, to the standards. Nobody will. And that goes for people who are alive today who will be judged 100 years from now. They won't be able to, measure up. So we're gonna forever be changing names, and I'm just getting tired of it.
Yeah, no, the quote from the article that I thought was interesting from that local First Nations leader sort of speaks to what you were saying, almost making your point for you. He had said that reconciliation includes reconciling the history that we have. Yeah, but that doesn't mean changing the history that we have. There's no need to rewrite history. That to me, that's not reconciliation. Reconciliation is what he said. Yeah, deal with the history you have. Don't go and rewrite everything and say, oh no, that in this case, this community is no longer called Powell River because that needs to be erased from history. It now needs to be called blank.
But I mean, here's the thing too. It's like you just said, right? Like you're erasing history, you're changing history, and that's the wrong thing to do. You should never do that. Because if you change history or erase history, you are not going to learn from history. And but I mean, you mentioned something there, the quote from the article about reconciliation. And I honestly, what is reconciliation? Does anybody even know? Because I don't think anybody knows what reconciliation is. Because
That's true.
I don't know what it means. Does it, like, when does it stop? Like, what is there an end goal? Like, there should be, if reconciliation is a goal, then there should be a defined goal. Like, what is that goal
When do we
to
get
say,
there? Yeah.
yeah, when do we get there? Because in the way I'm seeing things go, there is no end. Reconciliation will never end. And so we need to know what that end goal is. Like, what does reconciliation look like to First Nations? I want to know. So I know how to get there. We know what to do, and we can achieve it. Because if we don't know, we will never achieve it. And it will never be over.
Boy, as you were talking, it just 1984 just popped in my head. For those of you who are familiar with 1984 or have read it, Winston Smith's job, and he's the protagonist in the book, his job was rewriting history. That was what he was supposed to do. And I don't have the quote from the book right, but it essentially says, when all history is rewritten, when all, in this case, names are changed, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, ooh, here we are with groups trying to rewrite Canada's history
And change names.
and change names. So, remember how we said in this show, I think that was you were the first one to say it, Lewis, a couple of years back, how 1984 was meant to be a warning, not a blueprint. Are you listening?
Exactly.
Are you listening, Ottawa? Oh, wait, of course not.
No, I mean that's our goal, right? I mean, and we've talked about it on previous shows where I've said I don't know what the end goal is here with all of this. It just feels like we're being driven off a cliff intentionally. And I didn't, and I'm like, I can't understand why anybody would purposefully destroy their country. Like I don't understand what the end goal is. And you were saying it's control, and I'm like, but I don't understand how you get there when all you're doing is creating chaos, right? Like if all you're doing is creating chaos, how do you have control? Well, I've been listening to some podcasts about this very topic this week, and one of them, the guy said, you have to create chaos, like destabilize. You have to destabilize a population to ensure revolution happens, and you make sure that that revolution is the revolution you want. Then once that revolution has taken place and you have total control, then you eliminate the people who carried out the revolution because they are a destabilizing force. So you don't want them around anymore. So the first people to go are the woke left. Once the revolution takes place, you get rid of the woke left because they're the destabilizing force. So you get rid of them. They're the ones who got you there, right? They're the ones who created that revolution. And then you've got total control. And that's how it happened in China. It's how it happened in, all these countries that had it's how it happened in the USSR and, in Germany and in pre-World War II, right? Like all of this stuff, that's how it happened. That's what they did. And it happens every time. And that's what they did in the book 1984 too, right? Like that's how they got to where they got to. So it now makes sense to me.
Yeah, you create
It
chaos and people look to government for stability.
exactly. Yeah. So now it makes sense to me. So that's where we're headed.
Yep, and well, some of our other show topics will actually point that direction too. But let's stay in BC. Let's actually go onto the island to Victoria. And not that this MLA is necessarily from Victoria or the island. I don't actually know which riding she represents, but BC NDP MLA Selena Robinson has now announced she's leaving the NDP caucus to sit as an independent, alleging that the BC NDP of anti-Semitism in caucus alleges that the caucus had a lack of solidarity and a lack of empathy towards BC's Jewish community, even to the point where a parliamentary secretary for I can't remember who this person's a secretary for, but Iman Singh was the legislative secretary name, sorry, who was actually introduced a motion to support Palestine. And then you had brought up, well, the federal NDP, and we all know provincial and federal NDPs are all the same because a membership in one is a membership in both. The BC NDP have decided, or not BC, the federal NDP are bringing forward a motion to say, hey, Miss Robinson, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, the federal NDP is bringing a bill to the House tomorrow to be voted on that would have the Canadian government recognize a Palestinian state. So, Selena Robinson is not wrong. She's not wrong. And so she's left the party over it. And, I can't blame her.
I can't either. That's actually pretty shocking. I mean,
Is it?
NDP federally have, well, they've got a few seats in BC, and well, no, it's not shocking at all, actually. It's very sad to think that in, yeah, the one democracy in the Middle East that actually, well, they've got an awful lot of Arabs in their government, armed forces, civil service, civil society.
Their judiciary even.
Right. And but yet, let's say we want to recognize a Hamas state. Let's just call it what it is.
Well, and it's funny because like you hear all these people gaslighting, saying that that Israel is an apartheid state and yada yada yada, and it's like, do you people even do any research? Like, there are Arabs in the government, there are Arabs in their military, there's Arabs in their judiciary, there's the in fact there are oh, I'm trying to remember the name of the monument. But it's a sacred place in the Jewish faith, but it's also a sacred place in the Muslim faith. And it is in Israel, and Israelis are not allowed to pray at it.
Oh, oh, it's in
The
Jerusalem, right? Is that the, yeah, the Temple Mount.
Temple Mount. Yeah, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Israelis, Jews are not allowed to pray at the Temple Mount. Only Muslims are allowed to. So if this was an apartheid state, that would not be a fact. It would not be, that would be the other way around. And I mean, if you go into Palestine or Gaza or whatever you want to call it, if you're Jewish, if you go down the wrong road, you're dead. Like, just, you're done, you're dead. And it is not the same the other way around. And so, like, it's, yeah. I mean, I think that we've kind of beaten this to death, but it's but I mean, she's the NDP in our country. I don't understand the support that they have for Hamas when everything the NDP stands for in this country, Hamas would kill them for.
Yeah, that's true. So, one more note about Hamas. We still have a bit more about BC to talk, but Justin Trudeau was snowboarding last weekend before, and was actually accosted by some Hamas protesters on the ski hill, who called him out for his, I guess, not lack of support for Hamas, because he's certainly been kind of cool to both sides, but just called him out because he wasn't vocal enough in support of Hamas.
Yeah, we need, honestly, we need to shut this down. I mean, I am tired of this. When I was in Toronto 2 weeks ago, like, the pro-Palestinian or pro-Hamas, let's be real, that's what it mo really is pro-Hamas protests. They're everywhere. I saw them everywhere in Toronto. Like, way more than out here in the West. Like, it was crazy. It was everywhere.
That's sad.
Yeah. And I mean, like, they're harassing public officials and government officials, and this is gonna get out of hand real quick if someone doesn't put a stop to it.
Yep.
Someone could die. Like, someone in government could die over this. And if they're not careful. I mean, it's and they're following him to the ski hill to protest him at the ski hill. Like, wow. Like, if I was him, I'd be worried.
Yeah, I mean, it's his handlers are taking him out of events through the back alleys to avoid the protesters. Like, yeah. So to wrap up BC, Premier David Eby, of course, the head of government of BC, had a got a letter from Pierre Poilievre, like every provincial and territorial premier did, asking for support in lobbying the Trudeau government to pause the increase on the carbon tax. April 1st, as you all know, the carbon tax increases by $15 a ton from $65 to $80. So Pierre Poilievre sent letters to all the premiers saying, we want to stop this, need your support. Well, David Eby not only decided he wasn't willing to support this idea, he decided to mock Pierre Poilievre and said, quote, "I don't live in the Pierre Poilievre campaign office and baloney factory," end quote. Wow.
So, to all our listeners who don't live in BC, please feel sorry for me, because that's my premier. I've never liked David Eby, even before he was even in government. Like he headed up BC's chapter of the Civil Liberties Union before he went into politics, and I didn't like him then either, because he was pushing very, very like left-wing, very woke policies with the Civil Liberties Union as well. So but he's just, ever since getting into government, he's just gone further and further left, and now he's like, I don't know, he's crazy and he's useless and he's a tool, and I could go on and on. But I mean, just that quote there should tell you something. I mean, he does not care about affordability in this province, has proven it time and time again. Everything just keeps getting more and more expensive here, and he's perfectly fine with raising the carbon tax 23%. And this is what I was talking about earlier. This is, you got the majority of the country crying, screaming, don't increase the carbon tax, we can't afford it. And politicians going, you'll find a way.
Yeah, so
Right?
let's talk about that carbon tax revolt because, well, BC did not sign on to it, but seven provinces and one territory have. So this will surprise nobody that Saskatchewan, who was kind of leading the way, along with Alberta, have both said signed on to say, nope, don't increase the tax. Ontario joined in, all four of the Atlantic provinces, and there's actually letters from all the premiers, but most notably, Liberal Andrew Fury in Newfoundland signed on and said, "Hey, we can't afford this as Newfoundlanders. We need you to pause that increase in carbon tax." Premier of the Northwest Territories also joined in. So you've got now, with Ontario and Alberta and the other provinces, more than half of Canada's population represented in these seven provinces and one territory.
Now, I thought Wab Kanu was on board as well.
He was really kind of wishy-washy on it. He did say he didn't want, I think he spoke against the increase, but then when asked by a reporter, "Well, have you asked the premier or the prime minister to pause the tax?" And he says, "Well, I'm not saying I didn't ask him." "Well, did you ask him?" "Well, I mean, we're not going to publicize any discussions we've had."
Right,
So
so no.
I'm thinking that's a no. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, because I had heard that Wab Kanu was asking for no increase, but I guess he doesn't want to sign on to this publicly, because that would put him in Jagmeet Singh's bad books. So,
No, maybe,
and David Eby's, and so yeah, I mean, but yeah, I mean, like, it's crazy that the elected politicians in this country are not taking the opposition to this carbon tax seriously. Like you said, more than 50% of the country is being represented here, and I don't know anybody, like not a single person. I don't know anybody that supports the increase in the carbon tax right now. And in fact, I don't know if I know anybody who actually supports the carbon tax anymore. Like, people who used to, I now know, don't support it now. So I don't know. This is what I was saying about earlier, how the politicians, they don't listen to us anymore. It's what they want, and they will, you'll figure out how to pay these taxes because they say so.
Well, and here's a fun fact. The in well, the more than just Alberta, Saskatchewan, but the NDP is the official opposition party in Saskatchewan and Alberta. Both of those NDP official oppositions oppose the increase in the carbon tax at this point. In fact, we guess we could have put this at housekeeping. Naheed Nenshi, the former Calgary mayor, the local blowhard we discussed last week, officially is in the leadership race for the Alberta NDP and also spoke against the carbon tax, or at least the increase in the carbon tax. So you've got, well, that prominent NDPer and, well, at least two provinces' official opposition NDPs in opposition to the carbon tax. So maybe you need to listen up there, folks in government.
Yeah, but they won't. They won't. It's all about what they want, not what we want. And I mean, I frankly, I'm a little surprised that Naheed Nenshi is speaking out against it, because he's as left as they get. So I'm a little surprised by that. Speaking of him, good luck, Alberta.
Yep, because I'm sure he's going to win.
Yeah. Oh, he'll win the NDP leadership for sure.
Yeah.
Whether he wins the a provincial election, it's another question. I don't think so. I mean, there's too many people in rural Alberta that just do not support the guy. He probably would be supported in Edmonton. He'll have some support in Calgary, I'm sure, because there are a lot of stupid people living there, apparently. So I don't, no offense to anybody living in Calgary,
None at all.
unless you voted for Naheed Nenshi when he was mayor, then please take offense because you're an idiot. But he's gonna get some support from the two major centers for sure. But hopefully, Danielle Smith, who it seems every other province wishes was their premier, wins over Alberta, because her polling numbers are not great. And I don't understand. I don't understand that.
Yeah, no, I don't either. And well, let's actually talk about somebody else whose polling numbers aren't so great, yet he's still staying on. Justin Trudeau, in a recent interview with Radio Canada, had said, yeah, this whole prime minister gig, it can really get boring sometimes, and sometimes it's tough, but you know, I just gotta keep doing it because I hate Pierre Poilievre. Okay, that's not exactly what he said.
No, here's what he actually said. I think about quitting every day. It's a crazy job I'm doing, making the personal sacrifices, said Trudeau, who's split from his wife since taking office in 2015. Of course, it's super tough. Very prime ministerial language. Super tough. Super tough. Women's rights, LGBTQ rights, and progress, fighting climate change are among the issues Trudeau claimed are currently at stake in Canada. And he pointed to global attacks on democracies by what he called extreme populism. I couldn't be the man that I am and abandon the fight at this moment, is what he said.
Wow.
Yeah, the man that he is.
Now, see, the way you said the man that he is.
Yeah,
Now,
that's no, I didn't say that. He said that.
well, okay, yeah. Well, good. Glad that you're quoting him, because I
Yeah.
remember I can quote him from, I can't quote him actually, but early on in his tenure as prime minister, 2016, 2017, he once said, when pandering to an alphabet soup community, that he has no gender. So I wonder when he went from having no gender to being a man.
I don't remember him saying that. So, like, when you told me that before the show, I was like, oh my God, I don't remember him saying that. Why don't I remember him saying that? But apparently, you're right, he did. I don't know. I don't know when he became a man. I'm not even sure that he is. I mean, just because he says he is, well, okay, by today's standards, I guess if he says he is, then he is.
Oh, yeah, he identifies as. There you go.
Yeah, but well, one thing he did say, another thing that he did say in this interview, he said that he's in politics to serve, not to be popular. Well, congratulations, you succeeded.
Yes, he definitely succeeded. He's although he did admit being popular helps, but yep, he definitely is not popular. Although I will not agree with his follow-up to that by saying he's doing the right thing, because well, he is definitely not doing that.
Yeah. And oh, here's another quote. He says, "It is very easy in politics these days to attack attacks, to attack concrete measures." Well, yes, it is easy to attack attacks because this tax is garbage. Concrete measures, I've yet to see any, you twit. A tax is not a concrete measure. A tax is a tax. That is not a concrete measure to fight climate change. It's simply a tax, and it's a tax on people who can afford to pay it, and that's all it is. And in fact, it's a tax on people who can't afford to pay it too, as well, because it's on the trucking that get our food to the grocery store and gets our clothing to Walmart and all of that. I mean, it's completely asinine that you would want to make everything in the country more expensive. What I don't understand is why is there a carbon tax on electricity when you want everybody in the country to go to electricity for everything, cars, heating, hot water, cooking, all of that to be electrical. But yet there's a carbon tax on electricity.
Yeah, that makes an awful lot of sense, doesn't it? Nope.
Nope.
So, yes, Mr. Trudeau doesn't believe in a tax on concrete measures. Well, especially when there is a very concrete measure that's just been leveled, well, against Justin Trudeau himself. There is, I won't even read the list of complainants because it is a very long list of complainants, but Justin Trudeau is named in a lawsuit being sued for. Well, essentially for his acts against the Freedom Convoy is the impetus for sure, for freezing bank accounts and the suspension of people's civil liberties. All of this, I'm guessing, resulting from the Supreme Court decision that the Emergencies Act was unconstitutional, but get him. That's all I can say.
Well, who said this was going to happen?
I know this one. He lives in BC. He's a British Columbian. Oh, nope, he's a person who lives in BC. Sorry. And he's in the Okanagan. Oh, it was you.
That's right. That's right. It was me. And I said when they announced that ruling that it was unconstitutional. And the government appealed or said they were going to appeal. I said, on this show, I said they have to, because if they don't, if they have to appeal, if they don't appeal, then they're admitting that what they did was unconstitutional and opens themselves up for lawsuits for freezing people's bank accounts. Well, that's what this is. And it is in response to that ruling. So I'm right again.
You were
And
right
this
again.
time, I'm happy I'm right. Most of the time, I'm not happy I'm right, because most of the time, I'm right about stuff I don't want to be right about. This, I wanted to be right about, and I was.
Indeed, you are. Now, and actually, oddly enough, it's my turn to be right about something, which I also usually don't like being. And I've said on this show a lot of times, and not just because I'm a a Max Bernier fan, but I've said before that conservatives and liberals federally are often two sides of the same coin. And that's not always true. I mean, Pierre Poilievre is obviously a lot different than Justin Trudeau, but I mean, they so often act the same, talk the same, and walk the same. Well, just so happens. And we're going to go to Toronto. Of course we are. He was elected as a liberal, well, kind of. Kevin Vaughan in Spadina, Fort York, ran as a liberal candidate in 2021. Days before the vote, he was removed from the Liberal Party, but still was on the ballot as a liberal because ballots had been printed. there was an allegation of sexual assault that would had actually already gone away, but he did not disclose it, and that's why the Liberal Party kicked him out. So he was elected as a Liberal, but sits as an independent. And well, Justin Trudeau, remember, he's not polling so well right now. Well, they're not looking very good in Spadina, Fort York right now. So Kevin Vaughan said, you know what? I'd be open to joining the Conservatives and running for the Conservatives in the next election. And I said, of course you would be, because then you will win and get to keep your seat.
Yeah, this is something I've always said about politicians that cross the floor, right? If you're crossing the floor, there should be an election, right? Because you were elected as a liberal or you were elected as a conservative. And if you're going to switch the or cross the floor, then you should be resigning and calling an election. And this guy, at least he's going to wait for the election before he crosses the floor. But this kind of stuff happens too much, right? Like, I mean, I get it if, over time you start realizing that all the woke BS that you've been pushing and the all the division you've been creating in the country and all that is you're coming to this realization that it was all the wrong thing to do, and that you're coming to this epiphany that maybe the conservatives are right, that you're really thinking about changing teams because of that. Well, I understand, but maybe you should take some time off. Right, from politics for a little while before you decide to jump ship, because it just makes you look like someone who just licks their finger and sticks it in the air and sees which way the wind is blowing. Right. And I mean, because it, like, let's be real. If you hold the exact same opinions from when you're like 20 years old until you're like 60 years old, then you've wasted your life not learning anything. So people are going to change their opinions. They're going to change their beliefs in certain things, and you should. I mean, I don't believe all the same things I believed when I was 20 years old. I mean, for one, I mean, I know Superman's not real anymore. But it's your opinions and your political beliefs and all of that, they will change over time. I mean, they have to. If they don't, then you're not learning, right? But these politicians, when they flip-flop, when they go from one party to the other, I mean, to me, it is all opportunism. They don't really have any convictions. And they're just going with whatever way the wind is blowing. And that's, this guy feels like he kind of embodies that.
Oh, well, you're really going to hate when we go down to the provincial level then. But we're going to stick in Ontario and go just a little bit west of TO to Milton, where a by-election is coming up provincially. Doug Ford's Progressive Conservatives proud to announce their candidate for Milton, Zee Hamid. Zee Hamid in 2020 was actually a big fan of Liberal leadership candidate Stephen Del Duca. Even put money into Stephen Del Duca's campaign, although he was unsuccessful. And well, as recently as 2022, donated to the Milton Liberal Party of Ontario Constituency Association. But now is proud to be the 2024 Milton by-election candidate for the Progressive Conservatives. A true man of integrity.
I don't understand. Okay, here's what I really don't understand is I don't understand what's wrong with the conservative constituency, that they're accepting his nomination. And I mean, knowing his history, knowing that he was a liberal, knowing he supported Stephen Del Duca's leadership race, knowing that he, has donated as recently as 2022, why would you even want him?
Yeah, I can't even answer that. I mean, like, all I can
Well,
think was.
you can, because you have said, that a lot of these politicians are just, they're exactly that. They're liars, right? They're liars, and they just say whatever will get them elected. And there's quite a few politicians like that. This guy's one of them.
Yep, exactly. And interesting note, Bonnie Crombie, who is the newly elected Ontario Liberal leader, is considering running in this by-election. So it would be a pretty good fight. So just like I said in the federal by-election in Durham, where it was conservative Jamil Giovanni beating conservative Robert Rock because he had run for the other side. Oh well, we'll be seeing Liberal Bonnie Crombie versus Liberal Zee Hamid. It's sad.
Yeah, and Bonnie Crombie, she'll win,
I would think she
because
would.
the leader almost always wins. And it's funny because you could have someone who is like a riding where it was a conservative, and then the NDP leader decides to run in that riding, and the NDP leader wins. And I never understood why voters will just switch allegiances just because it's the leader of the party running, but that happens.
Yep, it does happen a lot. So
Yeah.
let's go right to Queen's Park now. Doug Ford and I well, I've actually given it to Doug Ford from both sides. And this time I'm actually on his side. He gave one heck of an impassioned speech, and you could tell he was flustered, he was frustrated. He was clearly, heard from people in Toronto that it's too much. The break-ins, the car thefts, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll talk about the car theft thing right after this. So Doug Ford in the house in Queen's Park, I just said, being people are tired of their house getting broke into, getting a gun put to their head while their stuff gets stolen. Kids are afraid to stay home alone with when their parents are out. And because these criminals have no repercussions, they get out on bail, and we need to start appointing like-minded judges who will keep them behind bars. To which I said, hear, hear. I am 100% on board. Well, who
Yeah.
wasn't, but former Liberal interim leader, that's Liberal Party of Ontario, who's also a federal Liberal, by the way, John Fraser. You'll remember John Fraser because when he left to let Bonnie Crombie become the new elected leader, he was the one that got the video send off from Greg Fergus, the Speaker of the House, Liberal to Liberal in the Speaker's robes. Anyway, that John Fraser. So he said, appointing judges based on ideology is not how we do things in Canada. This is not the United States. We appoint judges based on merit. Okay, remember I said John Fraser was also a federal liberal? What is Justin Trudeau, the federal liberal leader and prime minister, what is his usual criteria on appointing judges since because it's 2015?
Race, sex, possibly gender.
And largely ideology. I mean, if they're not
Yeah.
on board with his wokeness and inclusivity, well, they tend not to get appointed. Justin Trudeau brags that the Supreme Court is now a 5-4 female majority, and it was all about diversity. He appointed the first Indian judge and also the first Aboriginal judge. So yeah, Mr. Fraser, merit is out the window. It is actually all about ideology and wokeness. So,
Well, and
shut up.
it always kind of has been.
And honestly, from both sides, there was a, it's not a quote from Brian Mulroney, but I do remember him saying words to the effect of that he said that he would hire from the general public only after he has hired the very last conservative in Canada. And they're all like that. They're both sides do the exact same thing.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who thinks that our judiciary is less biased than the American way of selecting judges, you're completely wrong. It's just as bad. And unfortunately, I wish that all judges would rule based on the Constitution and our written laws, not ideology and political lines. But unfortunately, we don't have that. I mean, because as far as I'm concerned, judges should be especially on the Supreme Court, should be constitutional absolutists. Like, it should be the exact meaning of the Constitution, not some abstract first time ever has the Constitution ever been interpreted in this manner kind of rulings.
Right.
It should be constitutional absolutists should be the only judges appointed to the Supreme Court of Canada.
Yeah. Now, so I'm completely on board with that. So since we're still talking about Toronto, there was a post on X that I saw, and I think you had sent it to me within hours of my seeing it, from the Toronto police had made a statement in regards to the rampant car theft in Toronto right now. And yeah, you were not very happy with that statement.
Oh my God, no. The Toronto police representative said that the people of Toronto should leave their car keys at the front door of their house so that the carjackers don't have to break into their house and cause a home invasion in order to get those keys.
Because that's all they want, is just to steal the car.
Yeah. So let them have it.
Okay, I'm sorry, people. I shouldn't be laughing. It's not funny, but it's so stupid that it's funny. So what they're saying is basically hand your car keys to the carjackers, to the car thieves. So why not just leave your keys in the car then? Why don't you put a little sign in the window saying, keys inside, please don't break window?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, this infuriated me, because it's like, this is the reason. Like, it's like last year I had $5,000 worth of tools stolen from my business. The police were like, yeah, we know who did it, because there's only 15 people responsible for all the thefts in this part of the province. And but we can't go and search their home or anything like that, or their property, because there's no physical evidence that they did it. Now, I understand that, and as someone who believes in our Constitution, I also agree with that. But they don't have any fingerprints of the people who are responsible for all the thefts, because they don't even bother fingerprinting the crime scene, and they don't fingerprint the crime scene because there's no point. The people that when they do arrest them, they get released before they ever get charged, and you can't fingerprint them until they're charged. So there's nothing to compare those fingerprints to. So these 15 people are just going to keep robbing everyone, and there's nothing the police can do to stop it. And it's because of Crown prosecutors and judges who just throw these cases out, or give them, you know, community service or time served or house arrest or whatever. And none of it is ever, you know, it isn't a deterrent. And I mean, if they would just charge these 15 people and send them all to prison, all the thefts would be done. There wouldn't be any thefts, right? Like, I mean, idealistically, there would be no thefts. Of course, somebody's going to take their place, but it isn't going to be 15 new people right away, right? Like, I mean, like, do something about it. And this is what Doug Ford's talking about. He's saying, do something about it. Well, he's right. Do something about it. Don't be like, hey, just leave your keys at the front door so that they don't have to break into your house.
Yeah.
Well guess what? If you leave your keys at the front door or your car unlocked or whatever, your insurance probably won't even cover it, you know, like, because you made it really easy for them. Like,
well, that was the point I'd made when I replied to that post on X, and it was well, I'd seen it from Tracy Wilson. She'd reposted it from somebody else. Tracy Wilson is with the CCFR, by the way. And I love her. She really just tells it like it is. But anyway, the reply I had made to that post was, well, if your car is stolen and your keys are in it, and that happens a lot actually in my part of the country in winter, because people will start their car and then go inside while it warms up. And someone takes off with your car and the keys are in it, they can only be charged with joyriding. They actually aren't charged with theft because you've made the car available to them by leaving it running.
Yeah.
So then my question became, well, that being the case, if you are leaving your keys at the front door, you're essentially saying, here, take it. Is insurance even going to cover you for that stolen car? I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't either. But, and it's ridiculous that that person would be charged with joyriding and not theft when it's still not theirs.
Right?
Right? Like it should still be charged with theft. It's still not theirs. They took something that wasn't theirs.
Yeah. Well, and I
Like,
loved your response. And I know you can't say it on the air, but you had just said, it's my truck, and I'll leave the rest out.
oh, I said, it's my truck. F you. Like,
Yeah.
it's mine. You take it, you stole it. Right? Like, that's, yeah. Ah, it's so frustrating because it's like if they would just do their jobs and get these people, it isn't even very many. Like in my part of the world, it's only 15 people. Like it isn't even very many people. Like and these people are the ones that make life hell for everyone else.
Yep.
So do something. I mean, at least do something about it. If you're not going to do anything about the homeless people who are, tweaking out on the sidewalks, at least do something about the people that are stealing everybody's stuff.
Yeah. Well, I just can't believe that such advice would come out from a policing agency whose and one job is to uphold Canadian law. I have friends who are police officers. They swear an oath to uphold Canadian law. And this clown is saying, yeah, just make it easier for someone to break the law. And well, we know that you put an Apple tracker on your vehicle and that you know what's at the Port of Montreal right now, or you know what's at this warehouse right now. But yeah, we don't have the resources to go after. That's actually a border services problem now. F you, go do your goddamn job. You're right.
Yeah, and that's crazy too, right? Like if you put an Apple tag sorry, an AirTag
AirTag, that's it, yeah.
or a Samsung Galaxy tag on your vehicle and it's stolen and like it's at the Port of Vancouver or the Port of Montreal or the Port of Toronto, it's there because your tag says, "Hey, look, I'm right here." And they go, "Well, we don't know what shipping container it's in." Yeah, BS. You know, those things are super accurate, right? Like location-wise, like they're super accurate. Because the only way that you're actually going to pick it up on your phone is if it's within 30 meters of another phone. Like it's because it's through Bluetooth. So it's like it will only connect within like 20 or 30 meters or something like that of another phone. So it is super accurate. Like it's really hilarious. Like I watch these movies or whatever, and they go, "Ooh, triangulate their position with their cell phone or whatever." And it's like, "Oh, how accurate is it?" "Oh, it's within 10 city blocks, sir." BS. I mean, have you ever looked at a Snapchat map? I mean, it tells you exactly where they are. Or if you've got Family Link on it on your Android, it tells you like the address that your kids are at. It actually says this is the address where your kid is at. Like if your kid says, "Oh, I'm at Dairy Queen," and you look on the app, it says, "No, they're at 1562, Harrison Avenue," and you're like, "That's not Dairy Queen, right?" I mean, you know exactly where they are. Like it's so accurate,
Yep.
and so for the police to say, "Oh, we don't know which shipping container it's in," they're full of crap. Like it's easy. Like, oh yeah, there might be four of them stacked right there, but they're in one of the four. The truck is in one of the four, like,
Yep.
come on.
Yeah, ridiculous. So, we're going to wrap the show up today talking about, well, someone else not doing their job. And well, that's someone else we actually talked about before. That's Justin Trudeau, because when I said Canada takes a number two, well, it wasn't that, although that's also accurate. Canada, for the first time in decades, my entire lifetime for sure, and I'm 52 years old, Canada is now no longer the United States' number one trading partner. We are now number two. Who is now number one with the U.S.? Mexico is now America's largest trading partner. Wow, that's...
Is that just in illegal immigrants, or is that...
Well, that's a one-way deal. So.
Oh, right. Sorry. Well, I mean, is that any surprise? I mean, Canadians are so broke, we can't afford to buy anything from the U.S. anymore. And the Americans don't want to buy our stuff because we have, you know, all these carbon taxes and everything that makes our products way more expensive. So they're going to buy from a different country. I mean, it's not a surprise, but it's like, this is how far we've fallen. Like, we were number one, the number one trading partner of the U.S., and it was not close. Like, it was a big margin. And now we're number two, and it's taken 8 years to get there.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I mean, congratulations to Team Trudeau for negotiating gender parity into the USMCA, that only applies to Canada, by the way, and not Mexico and the US. And
yeah. Oh, and the carbon tax, which right, that only applies to Canada in the trade agreement.
Right. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but electric vehicles. Oh, wait, that's kind of sliding off the radar too. No business case for, well, anything anymore, apparently.
Yeah. It's really sad. I mean, we've already talked about how, like, on this show many times, we've talked about how there's been a huge drop in foreign investment in the Canadian economy since Justin Trudeau took office. Like, it's a dramatic drop, like something like 40 or 50%. Like, it's huge, the drop in foreign investment in our economy. The Canadian productivity, which is GDP per capita, has dropped precipitously since Justin Trudeau took office. It is now the lowest. Our productivity in Canada is the lowest of the G8 or the G7.
Seven.
G7? G7.
Seven.
G8 hasn't existed in a while. Sorry.
Correct.
but it's the lowest. We have the lowest productivity of any country in the G7 now. And now we're not the U.S. number one trading partner anymore. We're number two. Like, yep. It's mind-boggling how anybody thinks this guy's done a good job in the past 8 years.
But wait, there's more.
Oh, no.
Also, in the OECD, Organization of Economic Cooperative something or other, whatever, the OECD, which there's 34 countries, 36,
yeah,
30, somewhere in
34 or 35, I think.
Yeah. Somewhere in that ballpark. At any rate, the OECD has projected that Canada will actually be the slowest growing economy of those 34 or 35 nations in through the foreseeable future, through 2046, in fact.
Fantastic.
So not only are we taking the zero with our largest trading partner, well, we're going to be taking the zero with the top 30-some economies in the world. Thank you so much. Guy who thinks his job is boring sometimes
and wants to quit every day.
Every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he should take himself up on that advice and quit.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, today. Today would be good. Today would be very good. Yeah.
There might not be snow in Ottawa now, Justin, but take a walk in the dead grass and leaves and whatever it takes to make you wanna quit. Follow in your stepdad's footsteps.
Your stepdad would be proud.
You know, I mean, his real dad would be really proud, because of course Communists never quit. They just wait till they just die off in office. So, I had to get that one in there, Canada.
Poor Castro.
Poor Castro.
Yeah, he had Justin as a son. Poor
Yeah.
guy.
Oh, yes. Well, I guess he had it coming. All right, Canada. Well, we're going to wrap it up on that note. So thank you for joining us today. And until next week, it is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC. Good night.
Good night, Canada.